The Guardian.
World Cup, every 4 years it's the World Cup, World Cup.
If you don't pick up a grunt straight in the build-up, then we'll love it when you score a goal.
Ooh, did you see that?
World Cup, it might all end in tears or a headbutt. You can follow all the blogging on your laptop. From Slovenia to Slovakia, from Nigeria to the Cote d'Ivoire.
Ooh, ah, Cote d'Ivoire.
The Guardian and Observer, packed with World Cup coverage every day.
World Cup Daily Live, with James Richardson on Guardian.co.uk.
World Cup Daily, day four, and more big guns take the stage in South Africa. Double Dutch win clash at Calabash. Italy don't play prettily but survive Cape Town takedown, while Japan look as well drilled as a Ron Jeremy co-star in their win over Cameroon. The goal scorer, a man called Honda. Can't think of anything there. All the day four highlights on the way anyway, plus your post and our bumper preview of Tuesday's game featuring New Zealand, the return of Sven-Göran Eriksson, and all the raw clash of cultural excitement of Sean Ingle at the Korea DPR press conference ahead of their game with Brazil. All of that and more in today's World Cup Daily. On board pod tonight, Barney Roney.
Hello.
Hi, Barney. It's late at night, but you're not flagging.
No, I'm still going very strong.
Aren't you, though? And John Ashdown.
Hiya.
Hi, John. Top Japanese match result predictor, John Ashdown.
Yeah, I hope we're going to make plenty of that later on.
You toot your own trumpet like a South African fan. Why don't you? I have to say, Barney, actually, credit to you for your tweet that was doing the rounds earlier about the Australia lineup of the Germany game. No striker in this Australia team, wrote Barney. First time in history a group of 11 Aussie blokes can be described as not very offensive, question mark. Yes, good. Well, I'm glad that, yes.
What do you want me to say? I wrote, yeah.
Yes, you did. We always like a bit of pun action and invite, indeed, puntastic headlines of tomorrow. And, of course, that Honda fellow set many people thinking. A couple of them, Padrager 76, watching the Japan-Cameroon game. Honda's got a great engine on him. Butters 11, can Honda expect a civic reception upon his return to Japan? Do stop doing that, Barney. Surely that's not all. How about Honda pulls off the three-point turn?
No, that's not very good.
Is it not? All right. Honda takes Japan out of Cameroon's clutches. How about this Honda has capacious boot on him?
If he'd have spanked it in from 30 yards, maybe, but it was a bit of a tapping.
All right.
And why would you... No, that doesn't even make sense.
All right, then. Video Hound, Cameroon failed to storm Takeshi's castle. I like that one. And Barney, your brilliant one about the Italy game was?
I can't remember.
Oh, right, you can. Barney's not going to play tonight.
I don't really...
About 30,000 other people also had it, so I can reveal it was Italy escape from Alcaraz, because he scored the first goal.
They're not really good, though, are they, puns, really?
They're not. So let's not waste any more time with them and go straight on to the day's news headlines.
Bong.
Portugal have dismissed reports that Nani was sent home for disciplinary reasons and not the official shoulder injury. The Manchester United midfielder revealed upon his return to Lisbon that his injury was not serious and that he would be recovering in a week, fueling speculation that there'd been a bust-up over Nani, a bit like with Jude Law and Sienna.
Bong.
Adrian Mutu has lost his battle to avoid paying Chelsea €17 million of damages. The London club fired Mutu after his positive bust for cocaine. Then after he moved to City out on a free, they sued the player for loss of revenue, sparking a five-year legal battle which ended today at the Swiss Federal Court. It's a big blow for Mutu, which is, after all, how the whole problem started.
Bong.
And war has broken out between Italy and FIFA after the organisers' decision at last Friday's pre-tournament concert to have the World Cup trophy held aloft by Patrick Vieira, a Frenchman and one of last tournament's losing finalists, and not by an Italian. We asked the Italians, but no one turned up, say FIFA. The Italians have responded by banning FIFA TV from their training ground. It's a funny, it's a bizarre story, isn't it?
So what, they've banned FIFA TV?
They've literally banned FIFA TV.
Can they?
But what is FIFA TV?
It's just FIFA's own TV channel, which has got access to all the channels. It can even go to North Korea's training ground.
But why did they bother banning FIFA TV? That seems like a really odd way to
punish. Because they're not giving FIFA access to their team.
Is that the only thing they can do to FIFA?
Apparently. Now, tonight, then in at the Greenpoint Stadium, which I thought was what the Americans called that one up at Rustenburg, it was a 1-1 draw between Italy and Paraguay. You were minute by minuting, Barney, hence your state of feverish excitement. Tell me what you think.
Well, the first half, Italy were very disappointing. They looked very disjointed. In fact, they ended the half pointing and shouting and arguing among themselves. And they didn't look happy with the formation. It's only when they switched to 4-4-2 and they brought Camoranesi on to play on the right that they looked much better. And it was a 1-1 draw I think they'll take a bit of heart from. Obviously, they didn't really look like potential World Cup winners, but they often don't.
Mm.
The one thing is, I'm not sure where they're going to improve in that team. They seem to be lacking just a bit of something special. But they're always a thrilling sight at World Cups. I love watching Italy. Even when we say they're negative or they're not playing the way we want them to, it's something wonderful about watching them strutting around playing a World Cup match. And it was great. I'd say I didn't think much of Paraguay either. They looked very well organised.
No, I thought they were defending pretty well, didn't they?
Yeah, but...
apart from the goalkeeper on that goal, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah, which you'll probably blame on the ball. But, I mean, apart from that, they're just a sort of well-organised, quite tough, quite nasty team as well.
Mm. All right, Cherries on Top says, what the hell is the point of Camoranesi? He's been around forever, never done anything except fall over and give the ball away. What am I missing? Seems to be totally rubbish. I would say the thing about Camoranesi is, not being Italian, is that he actually runs into the box and after he makes a successful pass, then continues the move, which is quite a radical thing. And he is quite useful in that sense because he just kind of G's up.
Yeah, he's got lots of energy and nip and bite, and he runs in between the lines and he's very confident and very experienced and he always performs. It's funny, there's a big history of Argentinian players playing.
The Oriundi, certainly is. And one or two Brazilians as well, José Altafini.
Yeah, going way back.
Yeah, yeah, all the way back. Mm. But there you go. Well, all sorts of things to say about this game. As you say, it did seem a positive result by the end of it, although some worrying overtones. For example, Gigi Buffon having to leave at half-time with sciatic nerve pain. He's had a lot of back problems this season, so that is very worrying news. Although,
well, it's worrying because the substitute, Marchetti, really didn't look in the same league at all in terms of this incredibly reassuring presence that we're used to from Buffon. I'm sure he's a very good goalie, but like some other goalkeepers at this tournament, seemed a little bit raw.
Mm, he's been the breakout goalkeeper in Serie A this season. But otherwise, Gilardino ineffective as the lone striker, blah, 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 blah. But, yeah, I mean, who else is in this group? New Zealand and Slovakia.
Well, I guess that's the saving grace for both sides, is that they've got New Zealand and Slovakia to come. I mean, it opens up in a sense that the possibility of Italy finishing second in the group and then potentially taking on Holland in the second phase.
Right.
If Paraguay, for example, outscore Italy against the two other teams, which is possible on tonight's evidence.
I have to say, Paraguay didn't look like a team who were going to particularly outscore anyone.
Although Italy weren't peppering shots.
Left back for Italy, by the way. He looked very good.
He did, didn't he? He was one of the positives because he was one of the new breed, Crisito, and I thought he handled a tense situation with a lot of personality, more than, say, my big up from yesterday, Marchisio. He did in Montolivo as well.
He got better. And Cannavaro, you know, he's going to play for Ali, and he's very old and all the rest of it, but he looked great.
He's
still very athletic and very strong.
He rolled back the ears. It was magnificent to see. That, I have to say, that was never a free kick before their goal. De Rossi accepts full responsibility for allowing, was it Alcaraz?
Yeah.
Yeah, to score, but then he redeemed himself by, of course, equalising.
But the free kick was a long way out. They just didn't defend it properly. I mean, it should never have been a goal.
Mm. All right, then. Well, a point, which is, you know, I've seen them do worse than that and still get to the final. I don't think many Italians are expecting Italy to. In fact, today's editorial on the front page of the Gazzetta was all about, you know, if we win it, great. But if we just go out and play well and exit with dignity, then that's a success as well, which is, you know, nice to hear. You mention Holland or the Netherlands, as they're sometimes known. And, of course, they had a far more impressive 2-0 scoreline in their match against Denmark. A more impressive scoreline. The game itself, though, wasn't what we were expecting or hoping from the Dutch.
No, it was very stodgy from Holland, particularly in the first half when, you know, there was a lack of width and a lack of pace. I mean, it's an obvious thing to say, but they did look like they missed Arjen Robben. And once Ilaya came on in the second half, they things picked up a little bit, and he, of course, created the second goal for Dirk Kuyt.
Right, well, at the game this afternoon at Soccer City was ESPN.com's Leander Scherlakens, an old friend, of course, of the pod. So let's now join him to get the word from Johannesburg. Leander, are you there?
I am indeed, James. How are you?
I am very well. Thank you for asking. And I hope you are too, sir.
I am.
Good. All right. You were at the game today.
I was.
What about these Dutch? A little bit disappointing?
To me, it certainly was. For 70 or so minutes, they did not look all that good. They let the Danish sort of clog up the field and were sort of forced to play a short passing game and didn't exploit their true strengths, which would be the wings. To Denmark's credit, their central defensive block of Agger and Kjær did a very good job of shutting down both Robins van Persie, who wasn't allowed to operate as a target man, as he often does for the Netherlands, and Wesley Sneijder, who is their playmaker. But after about 70 or so minutes, the Danish really ran out of gas, and that coincided with the insertion of Eljero Elia, a young Dutch winger who was absolutely fantastic, who helped break open the Danish defense and ultimately set up the 2-0 for Dirk Kuyt, and in so doing put away the game.
Yeah, indeed. And of course, the game had really been opened up for Holland by Simon Poulsen's magnificent own goal. Lovely to see him smiling and chuckling away to himself afterwards. I think Danes are officially the happiest people alive, and he certainly didn't seem unduly perturbed by conceding in Denmark's World Cup opener. But anyway, but that certainly seemed to be the turning point in the game.
Well, yes, there's actually talk now, though, of the own goal being credited to Daniel Agger, as it came off him, and it must have taken a significant enough deflection, even though he was faced with his back to the ball. Morten Olsen, though, the Denmark coach, in the press conference, said he didn't blame Poulsen for what happened. It had happened to him in his own career, Olsen had said, and other than that, he had a good game, which I think is a fair assessment. But that certainly was the turning point, because it was a very even match until then, and you could really just see the nerves sort of evaporate in the Netherlands after that goal. I mean, you really saw just a load fall off their shoulders.
Hmm. Is this all that the Netherlands bring to the party, or do you think there's going to be a big improvement in the games to come with the arrival of Robin, maybe?
Well, Robin is one factor. Elia is another, who I think they'd be silly not to start. But the Netherlands tend to fizzle when they make a really strong start to the tournament, and they tend to progress much further when they sort of make an apprehensive start and sort of grow as the tournament proceeds. I mean, remember in 1998 when they made it to the semifinals and came very close to making it to the finals, they didn't start all that well in the group phase either.
Yeah, early days, as they say, early days. Excellent. Have you been enjoying the tournament so far, apart from this match this afternoon, Leander?
Oh, certainly. I was at the opening game, Mexico against South Africa, and quite frankly, my ears are still ringing. I quite literally went through two sets of earplugs, which sort of made me understand all the talk of trying to ban the vuvuzelas.
I'm just a bit concerned for your inner ear canals. How do you go through two sets of earplugs in a match?
Are they still inside your ears? Have you managed to extract them?
Well, they occasionally have to come out to confer with my colleagues.
Right.
And they don't decompress anymore after a while.
Oh, I see. It's like a cork or something. Yeah. Okay, good. Leander, listen, thank you so much for joining us. And I look forward to catching up with you again soon. And I hope you continue to enjoy the tournament, vuvuzelas notwithstanding.
I absolutely intend to, James. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Leander.
Soft, strong, and very, very long. This is World Cup Daily with James Richardson.
There you go then. Holland a little bit flat, surprisingly enough, in their opening performance there. The other game on Monday, Japan domiting the supposedly indomitable Lions of Cameroon. Surprising result for many, but not for you, you clever chap, John Ashton.
No, I called it.
Yeah, how did you do it?
Ashdown 1, World 0.
All right, what's your surprise for tomorrow then?
I don't think I have one tomorrow.
Oh, all right then.
Ivory Coast to beat Portugal, but I don't think that would be a surprise, would it really?
Japan, although they won, they only had 3 shots on goal. Did you know that's the fewest by a winning side in a World Cup finals game since 1966? But entirely in keeping with many of the matches that we've seen at South Africa.
Well, yeah, it took about sort of 40 minutes, close to 40 minutes for the first shot on target, and that was a Cameroon shot.
Mm.
And then Japan went down the other end and nicked one.
Was it just me, or were Cameroon really disappointing?
Well, I thought they were for 70 odd minutes, yeah. And then there was actually quite a grandstand finish. It was like a genuinely like a cup tie for the last 20 minutes, and Cameroon were pouring forward, and the Japanese rear guard effort was fantastic. Tanaka and Nakazawa, the two centre halves, were brilliant. Mm. And Cameroon hit the bar and could have equalised. It was Japan didn't really dominate in any sense of the word. It was a bit of a snatch and grab type effort. But the way they held out, you could see they might give Denmark a few problems. I think the trouble for Japan is that they play Holland next, so there's a risk they might lose a bit of the momentum that they perhaps gained in this game, and so they then will play Denmark in the final game with the wind slightly out of their sails.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I like the two fans dressed as condoms. Japanese. Did you not see that? Great big white sheaths they were wearing with a little red dot on the end. I think they were condoms. I couldn't think for the life of me what else they might have been.
Well, yeah, it's the Japanese flag, isn't it, with the white and the red. It wasn't a flag.
Not a condom, no. Just a, yeah. Okay, plenty of posts today. Many, many thanks for your contributions. The place to do this, if you're a listener but not a poster, is guardian.co.uk/World Cup Daily, I'm guessing. Tree Fiddy posted a homage to my paper review, focusing on England's draw with the USA. Thanks so much for that, Tree Fiddy, and you look really remarkable in your bald wig. I'm just wondering, could you do another? Because Uber producer Matt wants me to do one of those for Fridays. I was wondering if you could step up. That would help me out a bundle. Lots of people posting about Germany, who may or may not be the greatest football team to grace a World Cup since Brazil 1970 and definitely going to win this tournament, according to DJ Kelly. But generally, a lot of love for the Germans, not surprisingly. Nico 2, Germany is already in love with this team. Toby 80 raising the whole issue of the fact that apparently German players have been practicing with the Jabulani for half a season. They were one of the leagues that was granted early usage of said sphere. Other ones being the Eredivisie, I think, and MLS as well.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So why did the Premier League not bring these balls in?
Premier League runs its own ship generally, doesn't it?
Right, okay.
I'm not sure it has any effect really at all. I mean, all this players for a start have been able to train with the ball. The ball has been knocking around.
Mm.
And also, it's just a ball. I mean, the only people who ever talk about the ball are goalkeepers. And goalkeepers generally don't get asked about things. And when they do, they complain.
I've got a little theory about the goal. And I do think it's in people's heads a little bit. Because if you watch, Closer did it several times last night. There was a couple of chances tonight where Van Persie, I think, did it this afternoon, where strikers are just very conscious of striking the ball low at goalkeepers and are tending to hit it straight at the keepers because they're so, or this is my theory at least, they're so concerned about keeping the ball down and nobody's aiming for the top corners when they're close enough.
There has been a real lack of long-range shooting, hasn't there? Yeah. I mean, someone hit the bar today from quite a way up, but it's a weird thing. One thing that I haven't noticed is a lot of bad defending on crosses, particularly quite long. I wonder if that's got anything to do with the flight of the ball. But we look at the Italy goal they conceded today. But there's been a lot of bad defending on crosses.
Yeah, indeed. Still on that Germany thing, StugB22 says, let's not get too excited about Germany just yet. There's always a team that starts a World Cup by dashing straight out of the blocks and scoring loads of goals before losing form, stroke, defensive problems, etc. mean they get dumped out in the knockout stage. Remember Argentina in 2006? Indeed.
It's hard to see where that Germany team would have problems, though, isn't it? Because they seem to be a really well-rounded, good unit. Everybody's fit and strong and fast and well.
But we said the same thing about Argentina and Spain in the group stages last
time
around. Yeah,
but I mean, Germany have a history of having very good mentality in these tournaments, don't they? Problems don't suddenly just crop up.
Plus, they're in a tricky group, so you sort of, I think, quite often in the past, if you look at Spain's group, they don't actually have a challenge until they get to the knockout round, so they're slightly undercooked.
It's not really a tricky group. I mean, none of the groups are particularly tricky. This is an alleged group of death, Group G, but it's the only group that's of a proper, you know, World Cup strength.
Well, it might be. We'll see, of course, on Tuesday. One or two more posts before we start addressing Day 5's exciting lineup of matches. Heart in it Cynic, responding to our theme of footballers with appropriate names. He mentions Nadir Belhadj of the woeful Algerians. Art Deca responds that Nadir will never play for Zenith, which I think is a very, very apposite point. Blackguard is excited by our notion of a Jonathan Wilson-inspired goals are overrated T-shirt. He says, please send it to Mr. E. Heskey, care of England, World Cup headquarters, Royal Bafokeng Sports Complex.
You could have goals that overrated on the front, and on the back you could have, I'd rather watch a 1-1 than an 8-2.
Indeed. Barney, you caught some flack, buddy, for your comments about England. Any quick response you wanted to make about that?
I suppose I was probably a bit surprised.
Oh, I thought you were going to say you were going to in some way retract anything.
No, I didn't retract it. What did I say? I said I didn't think England would win the World Cup.
No, I don't think that was the problem. The bit was when you said if they did win the World Cup, it would be a negative thing.
I didn't think England particularly deserved to win the World Cup. I don't see how anyone could particularly dispute that, to be honest.
Well, if they win the World Cup, they probably deserve to win it.
Are England producing great players and great coaches? I mean, they're not.
Well, if they win the World Cup with them, then they will have.
If they win the World Cup, that'd be great. But they've won the World Cup once in
however
many years it is now. And really, we should be doing much better than that. I mean, I don't think there's anything, any dispute about that. So we have so many resources. We have an incredibly wealthy league, which generates a huge amount of money, which we don't plough back into creating more footballers or making football, making sure we're going to actually produce a generation of talented players who will win World Cups. It's not a very good way to run football. I don't think that's a controversial thing to say.
Well, a man I know wrote a book about it, and he found out that it was basically too windy on these islands to actually produce decent footballers. So, sorry about that.
World Cup Daily Live with James Richardson on Guardian.co.uk.
Let's move on then to Tuesday's games. The wait is almost over, ladies and gentlemen. New Zealand-Slovakia is upon us. John, New Zealand.
Yeah. No, I did a little bit of reading before because I thought you might do that.
All right.
Do you know who they beat on their way to the World Cup?
Fiji.
They beat them once and then they lost to them in the return game 2-0. It wasn't a full-strength side.
Bahrain.
Vanuatu and New Caledonia. Those were the four sides that they had to beat.
Wasn't that a character in The Day the Earth Stood Still?
New Caledonia?
No, Vanuatu. Never mind. they're up against Slovakia, who we should know a bit more about. You know, opponents of England of late.
Yes, they've got a couple of players that you might have heard of.
Mm-hmm.
Miroslav Stok, for one, who formerly of Chelsea, now of Fenerbahce.
Lovely.
They'll have Sestak up front, who'll be their big target man.
Marek Hamzic.
Marek Hamzic, of course,
Napoli playmaker,
and a lot of people expecting quite a lot from him.
Yes, yeah. Well, he's been the key. He's been the boss at Napoli for a while. And Martin Skrtel, of course, at the back. Who's playing for New Zealand?
Rory Fallon, Ryan Nelson, a selection of players from the Championship.
Two players currently without a club, three with non-league experience in England, and another one who works in a bank in Wellington, together with captain Ryan Nelson and. Well, one or two others. It's a motley crew, you'd have to say, Barney.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm looking forward to watching them. It's sort of like a World Cup game from the 1970s, where there are lots of players you've really never seen who do things like work in banks.
Meantime, a slightly more familiar set of opponents in Ivory Coast and Portugal. Playoff for second place in the group?
A really huge game for both of them. It's a shame, in a way, it's the first game in the group. It would be good if it was the last one. I mean, basically, whoever loses this game is probably going to have to beat Brazil to go through.
Aye, aye, aye.
And Ivory Coast are in a terrible state because Sven Göran Eriksson is their manager, but he's obviously come in. There are fractures within the squad and also within Didier Drogba's right arm.
Right.
And he's trying to get dispensation to wear a cast. But
yeah, now he broke his arm and everyone said, oh, that's him for the World Cup.
11 days ago.
Yeah, and how can he possibly be playing football?
Well, he's desperate to play. He obviously has a very high pain threshold as well. He can soldier on.
Well, we've noticed that in his career.
Yeah, no, I don't know. I mean, maybe he'll just spend the whole game writhing around on the floor. But I think it's very brave of him and he wants to play. But you imagine the first thing that's going to happen when he steps out there is someone's going to give him a massive whack on his right arm. And it's going to be agony. We're not sure if he's going to play or not.
If he doesn't, it's Seydou Doumbia.
Yeah, the CSKA Moscow flyer.
Correct.
He's a 33-year-old journeyman striker. I mean, it's not really the same. They've got Kalou as well. Mm-hmm. But they really, really need Drogba to play. I mean, he's irreplaceable for any team. Particularly
they've got Aruna Dindan as well, who can be exciting at times, haven't they? That's Ivory Coast, isn't it? Yeah.
I don't know.
They've got Kolo Touré, Yaya Touré, Didier Zakora, Emmanuel Abue.
I like the look of their central midfield with Zakora and Touré. And if you look at Portugal's players they've got in the middle of the park, Pepe and Deco, there's a sense that Zakora and Touré could really steamroll them. And if they've got a Drogba providing a cutting edge as well, I think Ivory Coast are going to win that tomorrow.
Really? What if, even without Drogba?
I would have to, reassess that. I think if Drogba plays and he can play anything like his capacity, then yeah, I think they've got a fantastic chance. I don't know, and they've got probably got the best chance of any team, of any African team, of getting through to the second phase.
Interesting.
Well, I think Ghana probably have got a pretty good chance.
Yeah.
I think if Ivory Coast win, that would be amazing, really. It's particularly if Drogba's playing with a broken arm. I mean, that would be extraordinary, wouldn't it?
Well, it'd be great to see Sven back in action as well. I don't know why, I'm just fascinated by seeing him sat there on the Ivory Coast bench.
He's always wanted to be Ivory Coast manager.
Yes.
Yeah.
Do you think he'll be passing, you know, wasn't he famous for his writing his little notes and then showing Steve Clarence, obviously not going to be there. But you like
Sven, by the way, he's being paid £2 million to manage them at the World Cup. Isn't that just amazing, really? I mean,
it's amazing the Ivory Coast FA have got that sort of
Yeah. There's a source of some dissension in the country, I think, how much he's being paid. It's extraordinary, really.
It is extraordinary, as is the fact that Cristiano Ronaldo, Twinkle Toes himself, didn't score. Am I right in saying he didn't score any goals in Portugal?
That's correct.
Qualifiers.
Yeah.
So why is it that he is incapable of finding the net for his country?
Well, he's not incapable. He scored 22 goals in 72 internationals.
All right, that's capable, isn't it?
But he's essentially a midfield player, and he made his debut when he was 18. So he's, you know, it's a pretty good record, particularly given that he hasn't scored
for seven games. Yeah.
Well, he's not incapable. He just he went very close many times, but they didn't have a good qualifying tournament all round. They had a playoff against Bosnia, which they just about won. And it's just a freakish thing. He'll be back. I mean, he's an incredibly talented player. And, you know, he'll be back. He was pretty good at the Euros a couple of years ago before they came up against Germany. And I think he could have a decent tournament. But don't forget, he finished the season very well.
Yeah, he did. He did. No Nani, as we mentioned earlier. Barney, there are all sorts of rumours that nobody's allowed to actually specifically clear up. But there are all sorts of rumours about
Yeah, there are definitely some rumours. If you look them up on the internet, you'll probably find out what they are. But yeah. I'm sure it's not true and he'd never do anything like that.
Right, okay. And the other game on Tuesday, the highest rated team in the World Cup against the lowest rated team in the World Cup, and that's Brazil and Korea DPR. Now, there was lots of excitement on Monday afternoon at the Korean DPR pre-game press conference. We sent along our very own dear leader, Sean Ingle, to get some insight into this most enigmatic of teams and find the odd North Korean fan or two or one. Well, just to find one, really. Anyway, over to you, Sean.
Hi, James. Hope all's well in London. I'm standing outside Ellis Park in Johannesburg, famous, of course, for when South Africa won the Rugby World Cup in 1995. I'm here, of course, because Brazil are playing North Korea tomorrow night, and we don't know that much about the North Korean team. And I've just come from the North Korean press conference, which was absolutely fascinating. It started off with a questioner asking the North Korean manager about his team, but using the words North Korea. And he immediately turned around and said, we are the Democratic People's Republic of North Korea, and then ended it, didn't answer the actual question itself. The North Korean coach was also asked about Kim Won-young, the forward who was named as the third keeper. And his response was fascinating. He said with an absolute straight face, what you don't know, because you don't know our system, is that Kim started as a goalkeeper, and he's very, very fast. And before this tournament, we decided, even though he's been a striker for years, that he wants to be a goalkeeper again. And we were all dumbfounded, and we thought, this can't be true. So anyway, I actually went to watch the North Koreans train, and there were only two goalkeepers wearing the goalkeeper's jerseys at the training, and Kim was wearing an outfield kit. But generally, the whole press conference was, you know, he didn't give much away. He kept referring to the great leader. We will win for the great leader. But his overall approach was, you know, I don't like you. He was glaring at us. It's rumoured that there won't be any supporters from North Korea here tomorrow night. And that the Chinese are going to bus in 1,000 Chinese fans to actually support North Korea. Now, I'm not sure that's true, but producer Pete and I are going to try and find some Chinese fans supporting North Korea, or even some North Korean fans.
Excuse me, sir. Have you seen any North Korean fans around?
No.
Chinese fans?
No. North Korea? No.
Have you seen any North Korean fans?
I don't know.
They're playing here tomorrow night against Brazil. Have you seen... No. No. Have you seen any North Korean fans in Johannesburg, or any Chinese fans wearing North Korean clothes?
Yeah, I think I see down that side.
Really?
Yeah.
And how many were there?
I think it's about 4 or 5.
Really?
Yeah, it's very excited. It's very excited.
And do you know much about North Korean team?
No, not yet.
And Brazil?
No, Brazil, I know. And Kaká, I know.
Do you know much about the North Korean team?
Yes.
Tell me about them.
No, but I don't know any players. But I saw them. They were playing a friendly game. And yeah, they playing very nice football.
And you know, but you think they have any chance against Brazil tomorrow?
No ways.
We're outside the stadium now watching the Brazilian team bus sponsored by Hyundai, and it says Lotado a Brasilia Inteiro esta aqui dentro, and there's about 30 Brazil fans outside waving flags and clapping and cheering and honking. No North Korean fans yet, but we did get a brief sight of Luis Fabiano. Can I ask you about tomorrow's game? Are you going? Are you excited?
Oh, absolutely, we are excited. I mean, after all, we are here to win our sixth cup. I mean, this is after all what we came here for.
Can you see North Korea stopping the Seleção?
Absolutely no way. I can't at all expect North Korea to stop Brazil. Not with the team that we and the way we are playing now.
And do you know much about North Korea?
I do know a little bit about North Korea. I've seen them play on relays, and the team is strong. They are very fast, but I wouldn't say that they have the quality and the team effort that it takes to defeat Brazil.
Finally, have you seen any North Korean fans?
No, absolutely nobody. I haven't seen a single North Korean from any color.
Have you seen any North Koreans?
Not yet.
I don't think they can
movie.
Actually
okay,
come out.
I don't understand the English.
Everyone here has been very, very friendly, very kind to us. But it's starting to get dark, and we've been advised that when nightfall comes, we should leave this area. Sorry we couldn't find any North Koreans for you, James. But we found a few Brazilians at least, and we will speak to you soon.
No, Sean, don't stop. Keep asking people. There's got to be one out there, because it's so easy to travel, of course, from North Korea to go and see match in South Africa. Sean England, that's where producer Pete's got to. Nice to know. Fascinating stuff, I can reveal, that Korea DPR have an ultra cautious 5-4-1 formation that proved difficult to breach in their qualifying campaign, and they have a player that they call the People's Rooney. But you read all this stuff in your previews elsewhere. Mm-hmm. It's Brazil on their way to the Hexa, they hope. Squad's fit. They some doubts about the amount of flair they have for a Brazilian side, but Kaká's raring to go alongside Robinho, who's got plenty of flair, and Luis Fabiano up front. Barney, you got to love him.
Yeah, I think Brazil are going to be interesting to watch. I mean, the thing that as striking about them is not so much the flair, but the extreme physical conditioning of the team. They're all really big, strong players. And even though, say, we haven't got much flair, everyone in that team is incredibly comfortable on the ball. Mm. The centre-backs can pass like midfielders, and they don't lose it. They look fantastic.
It's a fair point. I mean, Maicon, for example, the flariest fullback in the world.
I think there's no shortage of skill in that team.
Yeah. Yeah, indeed.
I don't fancy him, I have to say. In terms of winning the whole thing.
Oh, right.
Fancy them tomorrow, of course.
Right.
But Gilberto Silva, Felipe Melo.
Felipe Melo, he does well for...
To be fair to Brazil, they always have a few midfielders in their World Cup winning teams, and you think, what's he doing in there? Mm. And yeah, Kleberson, for example.
True.
And they just seem to play for Brazil, and they put them alongside the right kind of players, and they're great. And if Kaká plays well, that'll make a massive difference to them.
Mm. But he's had a ropey season. Robinho's had a ropey season.
Yeah, but
Melo's had a ropey season.
Robinho's had an outstanding season once he went back home.
Yeah, okay.
Playing alongside fellow Brazilians, he's been outstanding, and one might suspect that would be the case.
I don't think the fact that Kaká didn't settle very well in Real Madrid means he's going to have a bad World Cup. I mean, in many ways, he'll be absolutely desperate to play well and incredibly relieved to be playing for Brazil. This is his World Cup as well. I mean, he's just at the right age to do really well at it.
Mm. All right, then. Should be a cracking matchup that, as usual, football, what is it called? World Cup Daily will return at a similar time tomorrow night with a roundup of Tuesday's action. And look forward to Spain and the others who begin their campaigns on the Wednesday. Meantime, many thanks to Barney Rone for being with us this evening.
Thanks, Liz. I didn't get to tell you my whole den story, but we can save that one for another time.
It's a special one.
Yeah, it's a good one.
And John Ashdown.
Cheers.
Thank you. And special guest producer Jason. And you, the listener. And see you tomorrow.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.